Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of Schmurz Day, October 2nd, 2023. On the show today, news, listener questions, and in surveys, I'm more convinced than ever that the Star Cruiser isn't dead. Then in our main segment, we get so much listener mail about last week's fireworks show, with details that we didn't know about the first time around, we're going to revisit that again. Let's get started by bringing in the man who's renaming his cats Ketchup and seemingly Ranch. It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Well, Len, we originally called them Betty and Ginger, but as anyone who listened to the Disney Dish back in August when Josh Gad filled in for you, that show actually ended with a pretty spectacular sounding cat fight going on in the background. So we changed their names at that point to Bitey and Fighty.
Bitey and Fighty,
Bitey and Fighty. But this now brings me to a review of the Disney Dish that Andy from Idaho recently posted over on iTunes. And the headline for this 3-star review reads, "Informative, but too much background noise." Okay, so here we go. The review itself reads, "Jim and Len do a good job presenting a fun and informative podcast, but I personally find it difficult to finish episodes sometimes because of all the background noises. Tables being set, sirens, construction, and catfights. These are some of the noises that have detracted from the 10 or so episodes I have listened to so far." And Len, gotta tell you, I'm of two minds when it comes to this review. One part of me wants to sincerely apologize to Andy from Idaho about all the noise in the background, but there's another part of me who wants to reach out to Aaron Adams, the guy who edits the Disney Dish, and I want to ask him, can you create a sound effect that makes Disney Dish listeners think that they're hearing two cats fighting on the back of a moving fire truck while they're setting a table?
Lead into it, in other words.
Yeah. There we go. So
I mean, that's the thing. It's the time that works out best for us is the middle of the day, and stuff happens in the middle of the day. Yeah. We try and minimize it. Aaron does a great job of killing a lot of it. Yeah, sometimes it, guys, it's just unavoidable. So
there we go.
Anyway, so. But thanks for the review. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
All right, Jim. Let's do a quick shout out to subscribers over at DisneyDish.bandcamp.com. Thanks to new subscribers LH60563, J Press, Jenny Cat, and Big Bat John, and longtime subscribers Sarah Lynn, Matthew Pittman, Sean Moore, and Mark Brinkerhoff. Jim, these are the new flight attendants for Epcot's re-released Soarin' Over California. They say the best part of the job is meeting new people and getting to sleep at home every night, and the hardest part of the job is figuring out what to do with all the Cheez-Its and peanut snacks they never have time to hand out during the flight. True story.
All right, I have always wanted to ask about who was it that decided when they were making those snacks on the plane. It's like, okay, 5 peanuts or 6? What are we going
exactly,
for here, guys?
Yeah. You know, there's someone who does that too.
Could we make it 4.5? I mean, that would be a huge savings this quarter.
It was actually on a JetBlue flight recently where there were so few people on the plane, they gave us one of every snack without asking. And people were like, it was like Oprah's things, like Oprah's favorite things. People handed like, and you get a granola bar, and you get a granola. It was, people were very happy. It's, you know.
That's funny.
All right. So. All right, folks, before we do the news, a quick plug for our new show. Jim and I have been working with Imagineer Jim Scholl for almost 2 years on a new video series that explains how your favorite Disney attractions got built. The show is called Disney Unpacked. It comes out later this year. And you can see a preview of it at youtube.com/@DisneyUnpacked. Mm-hmm. On to the news. The news is sponsored by Touring Plans Travel Agency. We can help you book your next trip. Plus, it comes with a free Touring Plans subscription. Check us out at touringplans.com/dish. All right, Jim, the news. Mm-hmm. First, the Brightline train service has now opened between Orlando and Miami.
I saw that. Yeah. You know, the big yellow ribbon cutting and the confetti and everything.
It's true. And our own Christina Harrison, rode the rails from Miami to Orlando to see what it was like. She loved it. So a couple of things that She wants to highlight it's $79 in coach one way, $149 in premium, but premium comes with food and Wi-Fi. Okay. So it's about 3.5 hours one way, which is almost exactly what it is to drive. They have at least half a dozen trains per day going between Orlando and Miami. So take your pick of schedules. In comparison, Amtrak has two. And this train, the Brightline, goes at speeds up to 160 miles an hour. So at some point, you're really moving. Also, if you're coming into or out of Orlando, it's at Terminal C in Orlando and not A and B. So you get to see the new terminal with its intermodal transportation area in there, which is really, really nice. Terminal C is actually pretty nice, too. I've been there quite a few times.
Been trying to invent a reason to get over there. Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah, it's got really nice lounges. I mean, basically, it looks like a really upscale mall. Huge, too. So
it does.
Yeah,
it does.
Can't wait to try this on my my next trip to Miami, because it definitely feels a need.
Oh, God, yes.
Also, Jim, Journey of Water, inspired by Moana, opened this last Monday to annual Passholder previews at Epcot. Disney added a virtual queue line at the last minute for a walkthrough attraction. Why, Jim? Because it's always a surprise to Disney when Disney opens something.
I don't know if you also saw the stuff on social media where, I mean, you want to talk about irony that they actually had to close Journey of Water inspired by Moana because it was raining.
Sorry, folks. Come back when it's not wet.
There we go.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's a great walkthrough, though. It's a lot of fun. So, and the lines will calm down. So, also, Jim, Disney announced a new set of hotel room discounts. And this one is, the headline here is book early and save up to 25% on rooms at select Disney Resort hotels in the new year. And the reason why I mentioned this particular discount is that it's coming about a month earlier than they normally announce these deals. And I think this is Disney testing to see how soft early 2024 is going to be. And I went back in.
All right, so,
go ahead.
No. I just, and forgive me, your example here shows the Wilderness Lodge in the background. Is that on the pile, in the list here?
It is. And that's at the higher end because it's a deluxe, so you get a steeper discount on that. But the other interesting thing that I looked at here was, how does this discounted price compare to the discounted price of rooms over the past decade? Like, is this a fantastic deal or not? And so I went back and looked. I only had time to look at Pop Century, but I went back and looked at the cheapest Pop Century room every year from 2013 through 2024 with the rack rates. I converted it to $2023 using, you know, inflation calculators, and then I took the maximum discount available, you know, for that. So there's a little bit of math involved here, but a couple of interesting things. So in $2023, the cheapest Pop Century room in 2013, so 10 years ago, cost $125. Now it's $174. So the price has gone up by, you know, almost 40% over the in the last decade. The interesting thing, though, is, you know, prices pretty much tracked inflation plus a little bit up through 2019. So in 2019, a Pop Century room in $2023 went for $157. The next year, it jumped up 16% to $183. So the big jump in prices, was from 2019 to 2020. So they actually raised prices going into the pandemic, which nobody knew about the pandemic, but that was the big price increase. And prices have actually, in $2023, prices have actually come down from the 2020 peak. So it peaked at $183. In 2021, it was the same. If you look at this year, though, it's $174. Right now, a discounted 2024 room at Pop Century in constant dollars goes for about $158. And that puts it somewhere around 2020 prices. So this isn't the best deal that we've seen over the past decade. It is pretty much the best deal that we've seen in the last 5 years, since 2020.
Okay.
And that's
right. That price jump from 2019 to 2020, had the resort been offline, did they do a soft goods update or a hard goods? I mean, how do you justify jumping the Pop Century 16% in 1 year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a combination of the them finishing up the room renovations and then noticing that the Skyliner makes it more popular.
Oh, God, you're right. The Skyliner. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Please disregard. I'm a moron. Okay, anyway.
I only remembered it when you started talking about it. But yeah, but those are the two things, yeah. So
there we go. There we go.
So to put that $158 discounted Pop Century room into perspective. Right now, the least expensive DVC points rental for January 2024 is running about $200 to $250 a night. It's typically at Old Key West, and the Pop has Skyliner, of course. So it's probably the least expensive room that you're going to find on property in one of the value resorts with this discount. All right, Jim, on to surveys. On last week's show, we mentioned getting a glimpse into the in-depth surveys for the Galactic Star Cruiser. And this week, we got to talk with someone who's done one of those one-on-one surveys. Not going to mention anyone's name, not going to mention when it was happening, but I do have a list of the questions that Disney asked in this one-on-one personal interview about the Star Cruiser. Okay. So I'm going to break this up into three or four categories. The first one is pre-arrival questions. And those questions were, where did you first hear about the Galactic Star Cruiser? How did you prepare for it? The one thing I'd like to hear or to see in a follow-up question about this is, you know, when it asks, where did you hear about the Galactic Star Cruiser? I think one of the big things that we've talked about on the show is that Disney's marketing was off for the Star Cruiser.
It was.
So what I'd like to see a follow-up question here is, what did you think the Galactic Star Cruiser was when you first heard about it? Like, did you think it was a hotel or did you think it was an experience?
Another thing worth noting here, that how long did it take you to prepare your character question? Remember, you know, when you and Chrissy came back from getting, you know, you were on the first sailing of the Halcyon. And, you know, and Chrissy, you know, and again, I love your sister, you know, but she thinks of herself more as an introvert. And she described how hanging, you know, she hung back and watched, you know, other people, you know, really get into the, you know, the show, so to speak. And, you know, that whole notion of how long did it take to prepare your character, I think there's a number of people who, when they heard about the Galactic Star Cruiser and heard about, well, you know, you got to buy clothes and you got to have a character and you got to really throw yourself into it, you know, there were those folks who were like, geez, that sounds like a lot of work and I want to do this. I don't want to necessarily do that much homework before I go on vacation.
Right.
So
I kind of get that. It's interesting that you mentioned the introvert thing because there's actually a question on that we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
All right. The next section of the interview dealt with things that happened while on board the Star Cruiser. And the questions were these. Which storyline were you on? And that implies actually that you know that you were on a Jedi path or a smuggler's path, which is kind of interesting. That's kind of like an inside baseball question right there. But the next questions. What events impacted your personal story? What did you talk about with each of the characters? What was your first interaction with each character? And then, Jim, are you an introvert or an extrovert? And so this was an interesting question to me because this would be something that I thought Disney would have known about its audience for the Star Cruiser years ago when they were first planning this. Because here was my sort of line of thought here. If introverts are a large segment of the Star Wars fan base and they realized that they would have to be extroverts for this experience, you've already eliminated most of the people who would enjoy this thing the most. So asking this question after the fact is kind of interesting. So just as a follow-up, I emailed one of our friends, Alexis Frenzies, who is the chair of the psychology department at Elon University in North Carolina. I'm like, hey, Alexis, what percent of the U.S. population considers themselves introverted? And it varies, you know, based on exactly how you define it and, you know, time and stuff like that. But generally between like 30 and 50% of the population considers themselves introverted. So most people are extroverted. And I think this is one of those things where, again, if you have a fan base that is made up of a larger than usual percentage of introverts, you would probably have to adjust the story based on that. Last three questions, though, were super interesting. And again, I think it points to all of the different ways in which Disney's trying to redo the Star Cruiser experience to make it shorter and more effective. Also, they're also looking, Jim, I think this is no doubt, to make it cheaper to run. Because remember, one of the reasons it's closing is Disney couldn't make money on it at $5,000 per voyage, right? Okay. Damn. So the three questions were, how could Disney better integrate D3, so the AI robot in the room, into the story? And so when you and I were there, I think we played with it, you know, the little in-room video screen bot thing. But it didn't really seem to impact the story.
You know, when I'm at Walt Disney World, typically when I return to, you know, my hotel room, this is where, you know, my island of peace. You know, yeah. I this is where I go to regroup before I go back out and play. And so the whole notion, I have to tell you, Nancy definitely, you know, played with D3. In fact, I forget which of the folks on the Disney Dish fan event we did on the thing persuaded her, oh, you got to have it tell you a bedtime story. but yeah, I mean, it's the effect of, no, I'm off the clock at this point. I'm not going to check in with the droid. And
that's a great point, actually. Yeah, because if it becomes something that you have to interact with.
Yeah.
Then it's a chore. Yeah, then you're mm-hmm. never truly off, even in the room, which, again, going back mm-hmm. to the introvert-extrovert thing.
Yeah.
But still, the idea that they want to integrate more automated things into the story mm-hmm. means that they're looking mm-hmm. for ways to cut costs. Also, the next question is related. It was, how could Disney improve the interactions on the data pads to better support the story? And so one of the pieces of feedback that Disney's getting here is everyone seems to get the same activities when they're on Batuu, regardless of which story you're on. They just change the text to say, you're helping this person. We need you to do this same thing that everyone else is doing. So you may have to, like, you know, go examine a crate, and everyone examines yeah. the same crate, but the rationale mm-hmm. for examining the crate is different mm-hmm. depending on the story you're on. And I think people figure that out pretty quickly, especially if they're talking to each other on the Star Cruiser. So I think they're looking for ways here to, number one, expand the number of interactions. And again, that's also cheaper than dealing with regular, you know, with human beings. Number two, making it varied so that everyone doesn't do the same thing. Okay. The third question, though, Jim, and this is the last big one. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you made any impact on the story? Wow. And here's the thing that amazes me here is that is so not Disney. I mean, the way that this thing was conceived was everyone is in for the exact same adventure. Like, you can't change the ending. Remember, we talked about this. Like, I was originally going to try and, on the first Star Cruiser, stage a mutiny. Right, on the idea that if this really was a choose your own adventure game, I should be able mm-hmm. to do that. And we quickly realized that no matter what you did, it has no impact on the story. So I wonder, mm-hmm. by asking this question, do you feel like you made any impact on the story? Right, what are they going for there? Because it's not like they're asking, do you want to make an impact on the story, or should you have? It's, do you feel mm-hmm. like you did?
Is that something you're supposed to walk away with? You know, the notion of I saved the galaxy, you know, that...
Well, I mean, and here's the thing. If they mm-hmm. want future guests, like, let's just assume here, this is going to be a mm-hmm. one-day experience, an add-on to a mm-hmm. park visit. For Disney to be able to allow guests to make an impact on the story means the story has to be open-ended. I don't know how you... I mean, and Disney is famous for control, right? I don't know how those two things mesh. The talent is very talented. Don't get me wrong. They could do it. You know, starting a day-long adventure where you don't know exactly where it's going to end is not something mm-hmm. that Disney has a lot of experience with, I think. And I think that's going to be off-putting to management.
Well, all right. Let me share a story that Bruce Gordon once told me about. Once upon a time, Disney was looking at doing, you know, a theme park, a one-day theme park experience where it would be limited to 1,500 guests, and that's it. That's the only number of guests that could be allowed into the park. And the whole notion was that you created moments where guests had an impact. I mean, for example, before you arrived at the park, after you bought your admission for this teeny little intimate Disney theme park experience, they sent you a light bulb. And it's the effect of, they told you to come to this warehouse, go to this corner of the warehouse at this certain time of day, and bring the light bulb.
How many guests does it take to change a light bulb, Jim?
But here's the brilliant thing they did was that you know, so you step into the door opens, you step into this darkened warehouse, and who comes running at you out of the darkness but the Dreamfinder?
Oh.
And the thing is, the Dreamfinder said, asks, oh, good, you're here. Did you bring the light bulb? Yes, we did. He takes the light bulb out of your hand and he screws it into the just air that's in front of you. But what happens is suddenly behind you, 1,000 other light bulbs just like it light up, and it's Main Street.
Oh.
You know,
they
you created Main Street.
All right.
And then,
yeah, okay. All
you
right.
know, And then at the end of the night, literally, I mean, and this is after a day where you literally joined Buzz Lightyear on a Star Cruiser with Buzz piloting the ship while you fired at Zurg, or you went to Uncle Albert's, you know, house with Mary Poppins and had tea as you floated on the ceiling.
Wow.
And that sort of thing. And
okay, yeah.
The way the show ended at night was you suddenly, there was a lagoon space in the middle of this giant warehouse, and all 1,500 of you, this is the first time you've been together all night, and they do this amazing indoor light show, and it ends with the Dreamfinder floating out over the this lagoon on a hot air balloon, and he's illuminated by the one light bulb that you brought him. And he thanks you and reaches up and literally pulls the light cord and lights go out. But then there's a lighted path that leads you, you know, on your way out the door. And they, at the door, you're greeted by a Disney attendant. Oh, by the way, the Dreamfinder wanted us to give you this back, and you get your light bulb back.
Sounds, the thing. It sounds great. It's very personalized. The effects sound amazing. Jim, I'm thinking that's $50,000 a person.
No, that was an example. You know, that was the story that Bruce told me. Everyone thought it was the most amazing thing, and then we laid down, well, this is what it's going to cost.
Yeah.
And it's
$25,000 per person. Yeah,
We can't do that. But man, wouldn't it be cool if
God,
we could do that?
That's got to be great. You know. Yeah, that's amazing. All right. I think based on the surveys that they're doing here, we are going to see a modified Star Cruiser experience.
Okay.
I think the thing, I think the thing that changed management's mind is the reaction of people booking once they announced it was closing. There are stories here that we can't tell in public. You know what they are, Jim. Okay. But I think that closing it actually saved the Star Cruiser. I will give you guys one story. So Jim and I talk about, you know, things all the time, and we have stories that we can only tell long after the people involved are gone.
There we go.
There are many of them. And I'm going to give you one now because the Star Cruiser is closed and this particular person, who I'm not going to name, has moved on. Mm-hmm. When I did the original journey on the Star Cruiser, I've told the story on this show of me doing a dance in front of the stormtroopers where I said, you guys may look like giant Q-tips, but you have the legs of a ballerina. I am casting performers for my next film in the Hank Lonely series. It's going to be a Bollywood-style musical. And I basically did the routine from Robin Williams' The Birdcage, where he does the dance where it's like, you have to fossy.
It's just a wonderful bit.
but you keep it all inside. Okay, so I do that, right? And the stormtroopers have absolutely no idea how to respond to that. And again, remember, this is the very first voyage, so everything is new to everyone. Mm-hmm. I get done with the routine, and two things happen. One is some woman that I don't know walked up to me and said, that was the single greatest moment of my entire life. And she was a passenger. The second thing was, because I'm an introvert, I went over to a corner to get a glass of water. And this is the story you guys haven't heard before, but I can tell it now.
Okay.
I'm over there drinking a glass of water, and the wall opens up. It's a door that I did not know was there. Mm-hmm. Cast member walks out from it and introduces themselves and says what they do on the Star Cruiser, which I won't name, give you the name or the title. But this person, the cast member, says to me, we need your permission to show the video that we took of you doing the dance to future cast members so that they understand how people are preparing to be on the Star Cruiser. And I said, absolutely, knock yourself out. So, number one, I was apparently training material for the right reasons.
Cool.
But then the next thing this person says is, I understand you have 8x10 glasses of yourself. Can I have one autographed? I was like, absolutely, here you go.
What a great story.
All right, so never before told. That's great. You know, obviously couldn't tell it when the Star Cruiser was around, but it's closed now, so that's fine. There are a couple of other ones for some very interesting Disney people that I met some other time. But but anyway, that was it. Again, I think it's coming back, so super excited. Mm-hmm. All right, on to listener questions, Jim. This one's from Xavier, who says, I'm a big fan of Disney parades, especially a parade here in Disneyland. My question is, were there any plans for the Magic Kingdom to have a new parade for the 50th anniversary? Plans?
Speaking of stories, we can't tell.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the deal. You got to understand that remember, the 50th anniversary, officially kicked off September 30th, 2021. And, remember that the pandemic began March of 2020. And yes, there were all sorts of plans that were in the works. But remember how Bob Iger initially handed the keys, over to Bob Chapek in late February, early March? That's the thing. Iger was looking over the horizon at what was going on in China. It's like, oh no, don't want to be driving the bus on this one. Yeah. Here, throw him the keys. It's yours. But at the same time, there were so many things that were about to be fabricated, that were about to be put into production, that would have arrived at the parks some 18 months later. So what we ended up getting for the kingdom was the fireworks.
Oh, I'd already completely forgot about the fireworks. I thought you were going to go with iridescent cupcakes, but okay.
those two. Okay. I mean, it's just sort of like, and that's the thing. There was a full 7 years of planning that, was done out ahead. They literally had an all hands on deck in, when the park closed in 2020. And initially, Disney World is like, how long are we going to be closed? And it's like, and the fear was that it would stay as closed as long as Disneyland did, which would, 15 months?
Yeah, that was brutal.
So that was the thing. That the one thing that they knew they could get done, because you can do it on a computer, because you've done other fireworks projection shows, is Enchantment. And I think it speaks volumes. When you think about how long, for example, something like Wishes ran at the park.
Oh, yeah.
Where, what was it? Enchantment ran from, September 30th, 2021 to April of this year. And then it's like, we'll bring it back happily ever after. Yeah, why?
It did not survey well. It was a mess in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yes, there was a parade planned. But on the other hand, if you remember the story that Len told just on the last show about the character Cavalcades.
Cavalcades, baby.
So it's an interesting situation, folks.
Yeah, I don't expect the Magic Kingdom to get a new nighttime parade anytime soon. I think it would be... And the only reason, if it did get one, it would be because it's too expensive to build an actual attraction, and a parade is a better short-term fix. So we might see it for that. But I'm suspicious that we won't.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's a question from Nate. On your last show, you mentioned the idea of bringing a Rocketeer coaster to Tomorrowland. While I'd love to see that IP brought back anywhere, I've often imagined it adjacent to Tower of Terror in the studios. Rock and Roller Coaster is due for a retheme, and the Rocketeer would be a perfect thematic fit for Sunset Boulevard. Please tell me someone has considered this. Ooh, from your lips to God's ears, Nate.
Well, I will say this much, that once upon a time, there was a plan to actually put the South Seas Dinner Club that you see in the original Rocketeer movie on Sunset Boulevard, that it was going to be this amazing dinner club experience, and part of the entertainment was going to be a moment where suddenly the Rocketeer is in the club and a fight breaks out with gangsters.
And Jim, that's an excellent segue, because we got another listener question from Jason, who says this. I think an interesting segment would be about rides and attractions in the park that are way more popular and successful than the underlying movie, hint Rocketeer. For example, everyone associates Br'er Rabbit and Zippity-Doo-Dah with Splash Mountain way more than with Song of the South. Similarly, at Universal, Waterworld continues to be a must-see, but that Kevin Costner film underwhelmed. What other examples are there of theme park attractions that debuted alongside or after the movie TV show, but have eclipsed in success, acclaim, and popularity? All right, so...
It's
a good question. So I came up with a quick list, but if anyone has any other ideas, let me know. So again, limiting it to attractions that came after the movie, so not Haunted Mansion. Pirates of the Caribbean, which, Jim, you have noted, came out after Disney's earlier swashbuckling films, right?
This is true.
I would throw Jungle Cruise in there, because we all know it came from African Queen, the Humphrey Bogart movie, but nobody under the age of 50 remembers that film.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Rock and Roller Coaster, and I put this in there because Aerosmith hasn't put out an album in decades.
True.
And then, same thing with Tower of Terror. Like, Twilight Zone is probably not familiar to anyone under the age of 50.
Well, it's so interesting you bring that up, because think about it. When they decided to take this ride system to Tokyo Disney Seas. We love the drop. We love the setting. You know, the Japanese are, we have no idea what this television show is you're talking about.
Exactly.
So that's why they had to invent, you know, the Harrison Hightower, you know, storyline, because it's otherwise this just made no sense.
Well, there you go, Jason, right there. And then the last one I would throw in would be the Sci-Fi Dine-In. And the reason I'm throwing it in there is I would argue that most of the people going there have never been to a drive-in. I mean, when was the last time you went to a drive-in, Jim?
We actually have one of the remaining ones here in New England, just a town or so over, the Milford Drive-In. And I want to say the very last time, geez, what Pixar film did we see there?
Oh, you actually saw a modern film in a drive-in.
Well, relatively modern. I might have been up 2006, 2007. I mean, okay. You know.
So it's been a few decades. It's been more than 10 years.
But even then, it was like you didn't hang the speaker off your window. You turned the radio on.
Yeah. All right. It's a good list. Good question. Yeah. All right. Fair. All right. Last email is from Jonah, who says, "Hi, Len and Jim. I'm a longtime listener and fellow data geek. I was so excited when you were talking last week about the market price of vegetarian options at 50's Primetime Cafe." So just as a quick aside, remember last week, Jim, we had said that Disney had started to put the words market price on the vegetarian dishes at 50's Primetime Cafe. And I joked that now, along with doing your Genie Plus reservations at 7 a.m., you can catch the morning farm report as well to figure out what you're going to pay for tomatoes at 50's Primetime. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Jonah writes in and says, "I'm a market research expert in fresh foods and have started to watch as the fluctuating prices are now causing outlets to try and make back profits by charging based on yielded demand. While it's more popular in meat and cheese where input costs are erratic, given that there's so many different produces being produced from all over the country and beyond, it's not that common to do market pricing in vegetables. Maybe this is where Disney's strategy, their data strategy, of being able to charge prices based on demand is another way that Disney profit centers are outsmarting us all. They have so much amazing data, and as much as I hate to pay extra, I'm kind of in awe at how they're able to use it all. Imagine if those apple orchards Jim talked about had the kind of market intel guiding their strategy."
This is true. Go with the pink ladies, not the Macintosh. You know, like,
Fuji's, are you insane in this economy?
There we go.
I love it that Jonah is a market research expert in fresh foods. Mm-hmm. Like, we have all kinds of listeners who do fascinating things. It's just kind of great.
I love our audience, you know, from Andy in Idaho all the way across the barn. So, you know.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Jim continues the story of the best fireworks show ever seen in Walt Disney World. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all know what's good for us, right? Eat an apple instead of grabbing a handful of Halloween candy. Or better yet, go outside, take a walk, rather than sitting there for another hour thumbing through TikTok. Unfortunately, it's at moments like this where sometimes your brain is not your friend. It makes you think of that embarrassing thing you did back in third grade, or worse, something that you said at the office just today that you really wish you could take back right now, which then sets a spiral of negative thoughts and feelings in motion. Look, we've all had moments in our lives like this where your brain gets in the way. I mean, you know what you should do, what's good for you, but then you just can't bring yourself to do it. If you've experienced a moment like this where you just can't figure out what's holding you back, well, therapy can help you learn to work for yourself rather than against yourself. And look, folks, I know of what I speak here. Back in the mid-1990s, I was the poster child for self-destructive behavior. I could snatch defeat from the jaws of victory without even trying. But eventually, therapy helped me get those behaviors under control. I mean, I'm human. I still have bad days. But at least nowadays, I know why I'm having a bad day. And thanks to what I learned from my therapist, I can then course correct. So if you're hankering to become a better version of yourself, take it from me, therapy helps. And if you're thinking about starting therapy, well, why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. So make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DisneyDish today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DisneyDish. We thank them for sponsoring today's episode.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And we're back. All right, Jim. I didn't read one listener question that we got because I wanted to use it as an intro for this topic. And that listener email was from Mandy, who wrote in with a comment about last week's best fireworks show ever story. And Mandy says, "This fireworks story reminded me of when I worked in the Magic Kingdom's labor department in the mid-2000s. I was in the modified duty office where we handled cast members working with workers' compensation restrictions who couldn't perform their regular jobs. One of the many positions we had to fill was for two people daily to pick up live fireworks shells. And simply assigning someone to this task led to many swift injury recoveries, and we never heard from them again as they promptly returned ready to work back to their originally assigned home locations. P.S. The equity performers in entertainment were always the fastest out the door and back to their regular jobs." Oh, you can't, like, you can't stand on your feet all day. You know? Hey, you know what? We've got a job where you can sit down for almost all of it. Yeah, it's driving the fireworks truck. Hello? Hello?
And they're gone. And they're gone. Hi. No. But again, this was one of many amazing you know, emails and letters and folks reaching out with stories, again, which keyed off of how we talked about last week, the American Pyrotechnic Association celebrating their 50th anniversary of the founding of that organization by holding their annual convention on Walt Disney World property, which, again, made sense. I mean, Disney World is the world's largest user of pyrotechnic materials, so they supposedly closed out this event with the most spectacular fireworks display ever presented on property. But given, we were just talking about the wonderful audience we have here for Disney Dish, so it's really not a surprise that a few of you were actually on property back in September of 1998, and you witnessed this dazzling display in person.
So jealous. I'm so jealous right now.
So again, given these stories too good to share, we're going to punt the Peter Pan feature we were going to do for this week. We'll discuss that Fantasyland favorite next week. But first, let's start with Brandon Holst's recollection of that night's events. Right. So it says, "Gentlemen, longtime listener, first time writer. I'm a veteran theme park operator and still work in the industry as a consultant and really enjoy the scientific technical angle Len brings to the podcast in addition to Jim's wonderful historic insights. I particularly enjoyed this week's feature on Rockin' Rockets event from 1998. That year, I was a guest service manager in monorail operations at Walt Disney World. And since I was the new guy, I was assigned to be the monorail liaison for this event, and we had to park all trains inside stations while the pyrotechnics were going off, just in case of a stray shell careening into the beam.
That's true.
You know, and then after the show concluded, the maintenance team then drove the tractors around the beamway to inspect for damages before we could then give the all clear and restart the monorail
system. Good point.
So, all right, so you can imagine my disappointment, sarcasm intended, when I was told that my position during Rockin' Rockets would be atop the southwest corner rooftop of the Contemporary Tower, keeping an eye out for any errant projectiles.
Yeah, I feel so bad for you here.
Thanks, tough gig.
Yeah.
So he got to watch Kenny Loggins' set from the absolute best seat in the house for that show, and he said, "Definitely a highlight of my Disney career." 25 years has clouded my memory somewhat. However, it's my recollection that the second night event was canceled due to a tropical storm that was headed our way. In fact, I think they had to strike the stage that night as soon as the last show exploded.
Wow. Okay. So they really got this in under the wire.
They did. They did. And thank you, by the way, Brandon, for your insider's account of that night's events. But as for the second night of Rockin' Rockets being canceled due to a tropical storm, this is what friend of the show, Bio Reconstruct, remembers. And he says, gosh, I'm pretty sure that Rockin' Rockets back in 1998 was only one night, with the second night being canceled due to a nearby hurricane and the approaching wind field. And okay, so here's the interesting thing. Two nights worth of show and fireworks got rolled into one.
Yeah, so it was already going to be spectacular over two nights. And then they put everything into one. Oh, my God. I would love to know what it would cost in today's dollars to recreate this. Like, even if it's possible. Because, again, you'd have to shut down the monorail. You'd have to reserve the contemporary. You'd have to reserve the contemporary. So much stuff would have to happen. I don't even know that Disney would agree to this anymore.
Back to Bio Reconstruct's memory of the show. It said, I watched Rockin' Rockets from the top of the Contemporary after dinner at the California Grill. And it was bizarre to see my work. Roller Coaster Rabbit was the second of three Roger Rabbit shorts that were created for theatrical release. And what was especially cool about Roller Coaster Rabbit is that it was animated by the team at Walt Disney Feature Animation Florida, and that this particular Roger Rabbit short went out into cinemas June of 1990, attached to all of the prints Disney made for Dick Tracy. But all right,
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
And anyway, back to Bio Reconstruct's memory of the night. It was bizarre to see my work for Roller Coaster Rabbit up on the big screen, which was offered during intermission for Disney Rockin' Rockets. So,
Did you know that Bio Reconstruct worked in animation before this?
I sort of alluded to it. I mean, again, you know, that Bio Reconstruct is a man of mystery.
So many things. It's true.
He does. And to this day, I don't know if it's a helicopter or a dirigible. I mean, how he's getting those shots.
Assumed he flew like Superman. I didn't know that there was.
Wow. Yeah. Well, there we go. All right. So. But again, when you think about, again, Bio Reconstruct, our eye in the sky, what's so cool about him getting to experience Rock and Roller Coaster from the, you know, the California Grill? Yeah. He's the eye in the sky.
And he has pictures of them.
He has pictures. In fact, if you go to Bio Reconstruct Twitter X, his feed on that platform for September 26th of this year, you can only see some images of some of the more spectacular shells that were fired off that evening. You can also see the elaborate, albeit temporary, huge physical plant that Disney built right across the street from the Contemporary to stage the show.
And this was the interesting thing to me, because when I was looking at Bio's photos, I knew that they were inside the California Grill, but for the life of me, I couldn't figure out where inside the California Grill, because none of it looked familiar. And again, it's been 25 years, but also because they had so much special stuff set up, it was hard to figure out exactly where you were in relationship to the park. It was amazing. Photos too.
Killer stuff. Now, speaking of which, though, he describes, you know, this event that's being held up in the California Grill in conjunction with Rockin' Rockets is, I did the California Grill dining event for Rockin' Rockets. It was great. They had us enter the kitchen to get our food. We bumped into the cooks at their stations as they prepared our food to order right at the stove at times. And I have to ask, you have been to all sorts of dining events at Disney. You know, and remember, this is 1998. Yeah. The California Grill actually opened in May of 1995. Have you ever done an event like that where you went into the kitchen?
I mean, an official Disney event where you go? No. I mean, for one thing, there's so much liability with guests walking. I mean, there's boiling stuff. There's stuff on fire. There's sharp knives. Everything's wet.
Yeah.
I've been in a Disney kitchen during service, but not as part of an event.
Yep. You know, and again, at some point, we're going to have to tell Your great story from the open of mission space and the soup. Oh my God, the soup story. Back to the Rockin' Rockets. And what Bio mentioned earlier about the second evening of Rockin' Rockets being canceled due to a tropical storm. Well, he's not wrong. Hurricane Georges had formed out in the far eastern Atlantic back on September 5th, 1998. Forecasters watching this thing as it gathered strength, moving to the northwest and passing over first Puerto Rico and then hitting eastern Cuba. And so 1 week later, it's a Category 2, extremely dangerous winds, reaching a speed of 110 miles an hour. And now, mind you, Georges is just going to graze Florida. It would make landfall in Key West and then veer off into the Gulf of Mexico. But the wind field for this thing, Len, was so huge, it reached all the way up to Tallahassee.
It
was
the entire state of Florida.
Entire state of Florida. Okay. So it was one of these things where it's like, but it, you know, it was going to make landfall morning of the 25th, which meant that Disney could get in one show of Rock and Roller Coaster on the night of the 24th. But as Brandon mentioned, them striking the set, you know, the moment that the, you know, the show ended, because the thinking was that, you know, everything that was lying there on the ground with 110 mile an hour wind becomes a projectile.
Jim,
so it's like,
Jim,
guys,
did we just write the script for Sharknado 5? Did we? I think we did.
Okay. Okay. All right. I did. Slight modification of my usual spiel here. That check goes to Len Testa and Jim Hill. Exactly. Damn it! I'm getting my chunks. Exactly. Okay. So anyway, now this is where it gets interesting. You know, we have what was supposed to be a two-night event, a 50th anniversary convention for the American Pyrotechnic Association, gets crammed into a one-night event. And again, we know that Kenny Loggins and the B-52s performed because, well, again, Brandon mentioned, you know, it's, you know, up there in the corner of the Contemporary looking down at Kenny Loggins perform his set. Bioreconstruct, a miracle worker, amazing man. He found online recordings, live recordings that were made of both of these groups as they performed at Walt Disney World.
Amazing.
And get you know, and in fact, he showed me, he ordered them and already had them. But in fact, it sent me photographs.
He sent me photos too. The thing I loved about the sleeves that these CDs were in is it looked like somebody bought one of those late 1990s 500 fonts on a CD for $5 and used the same three fonts on everything.
Yeah.
It was, brought me back. Yeah.
That was the time when, I do have that recording. Hang on, let me fire up my printer. Anyway, this brings us to the other group that was supposed to perform at Disney's Rockin' Rockets, 10,000 Maniacs.
I know.
And this is the thing, I can't find any proof that they hit the stage on September 24th. So could it be the 10,000 Maniacs who were supposed to perform the night of the 25th, the event that got canceled?
That seems likely,
Well, the other thing that's kind of an interesting bend in the story, and again, this comes from Bioreconstruct, who actually listened to the B-52 CD, and, you know, the one that was supposed to recorded live at Rockin' Rockets, and what he noticed is it sounds like the B-52s recorded indoors. As part of the band's chit-chat between songs, the B-52s supposedly apologized to the audience for the fireworks display getting canceled. So it's like,
so maybe they performed on the second night.
Well, or maybe, you know, remember, the folks are still there for the convention. Maybe they just had the band perform somewhere indoors, and it's like, we're sorry you can't have the fireworks show, but we're here, we're happy to entertain you.
Interesting.
Anyway, but again, still other interesting questions associated with Rockin' Rockets. This note from Jin Nepley. And he says, gentlemen, I vividly remember seeing a fireworks show from the beach at Wilderness Lodge being launched from the Contemporary, apparently part of some pyrotechnic convention. The joke between my wife and I was that the vendors didn't want to pack anything up and take it home with them. So instead, they launched it all. You know, so it was impressive and memorable. But problem is, we didn't visit Walt Disney World in 1998. We were at Disneyland that year. So did those conventions, and by extension, those shows happen later, like, say, 2007? So, Jim, you're just 1 year off. The American Pyrotechnic Association returned to Walt Disney World in September of 2008 to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the founding of that organization. And over the course of that event, Len, they staged three different never-to-be-forgotten fireworks displays on property. Show number one was over the actual Lake Buena Vista along the waterfront at Downtown Disney. Mm-hmm. The shells that were used in this presentation were provided by the Parenti Fireworks Company.
Oh, from Italy.
From Malera, Italy. There we go. And that this one was presented on the night of September 18th, 2008. Show number two was fired off along the shores of Fort Wilderness. Shows for that presentation were provided by Pyrotechnico of Newcastle, Pennsylvania. And that show was presented on the 19th. And then show number three, the grand finale of the 60th anniversary of the American Pyrotechnics Association. That was presented right where Rockin' Rockets was staged, on the lawn across from the Contemporary. Shells were fired off from 24 different locations around the hotel. The show was entitled Welcome to Our World and featured music from Animal Kingdom theme park, as well as the movie and stage version of Disney's Lion King.
Wow.
And this presentation was supposed to be the largest fireworks show ever to be presented on Walt Disney World property. And which, remember, given the show we talked about on last week's show, the bicentennial yeah. presentation inside of the Magic Kingdom, where thousands of shells were fired off each night of that four-day-long event.
This was bigger than that.
This was bigger than that.
Insane.
But the beauty part, Len, you can go to YouTube right now and watch videos that people took at Walt Disney World in September of 2008 of both of these firework displays. The one that was done over Lake Buena Vista at Downtown Disney, as well as Welcome to Our World. And I'm sure somewhere out there, somebody also has coverage of the Fort Wilderness show, but I couldn't come across that. But again, so if you want to see and judge for yourself, is this in fact the biggest show ever? Just look for Welcome to Our World, September 2008 on YouTube.
I think, Jim, we have to lobby the American Pyrotechnics mm-hmm. Association to hold another convention in Walt Disney World. Like, we need a letter writing campaign here.
That's a wonderful idea. But thinking of big fireworks related stories, going to circle back to Brandon Holst's email that he shared. One last story, folks. Okay. You know, so here we go. As a college program cast member back in 1994, I talked my way into shadowing the Illumination stage manager one night. We got to watch the show from the control booth on top of the Mexico Pavilion, where there was a large console with each launch location status indicated, yeah. as well as a manual fire button for each of the barges in case the automation just didn't work as intended.
There's actually another control booth, but I think for different show elements at Canada.
I did not know that. Okay.
I'm not saying I've been in the console, but I've been very close to the console. Okay. Wow. All right, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a button similar to the one that
Go ahead, do the
Brandon
story. Yeah, do the story. Yeah.
There we go. All right. In the corner of the panel was a lone button that labeled World War III.
A submarine rises from the lagoon.
There we go. So curious, I asked the stage manager what that was all about. He told me that was for the New Year's Eve and 4th of July shows at Epcot, where, as he described, they pull a batting cage, they put it on a pontoon boat, and stuff it to the top with fireworks. And when the time comes, they hit the World War III button.
Yeah. And just like World War III, there's no going back once you hit the button.
No. So.
Yeah. One of the things I miss is the mm-hmm. holiday tag on the Epcot fireworks. Because if you guys have ever experienced it, you know it does two things. Mm-hmm. One is it lights up the sky like it's daylight, mm-hmm. but at night. But number two, it's one of those rare times where you can actually feel the ground shake underneath you from fireworks. And it's just, you know, like your chest is beating from the fireworks. It's just, it's mm-hmm. very loud. It's very physical. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, kind of miss that.
No, absolutely. That sort of visceral thing is why we love fireworks.
Yeah,
but anyway, just thank you to everyone who reached out this week and shared these amazing stories about Disney's Rockin' Rockets, as well as other behind-the-scenes aspects of the Walt Disney World Resort. And again, next week, as promised, we're going to take a close look at the park's Peter Pan flight attraction.
Definitely. So. Great story, Jim. Thanks for everybody for sending everything in. These were really great letters this week.
Yeah, no. Really enjoyed them.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for the show today. You can help support our show and at Jim Hill Media by subscribing over at disneydish.bandcamp.com, where you'll find exclusive shows never before heard on iTunes. On next week's show, we're going to do that history of Peter Pan's Flight, one of the few attractions to appear in almost every Disney resort around the world. You can find more of Jim at jimhillmedia.com and more of me, Len, at touringplans.com. Also, Jim and I are going to be doing a live podcast from the Theme Park Play Workshop at MIT's Game Lab around 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 9th, 2023. And the general public, that's you, is invited, and we'll have more details shortly.
I cannot understand why MIT has lowered
I already have standards. An opening line, which I'm not going to share for the podcast. I've started writing the script. Anyway.
Okay.
We're produced fabulously by Aaron Adams, who'll be serving up Nonna Adams' world-famous pistachio cannoli. The secret ingredient is love. At the Shrewsbury Street Italian Heritage Parade this coming Sunday, October 8th, 2023, starting at noon on Shrewsbury Street in beautiful downtown Worcester, Massachusetts. While Aaron's doing that, please go into iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.